Hello everyone, please do not adjust your sets. This is the History of England. This is a special episode, and Davey, who is part of it, has kindly sung and played this as intro music. It's called Doctor, O Doctor by Joshua James. Then it'll be into Davey's shed, whence the rest of the episode.
Doctor, O Doctor, please bring me my wine. All the nights to remember are getting harder to find, and the wards of confusion to each corner of my mind. Baby, call me up when you get some time, so I'll stay with you until the morning, when the golden sun shades the moon, and when the black disease eats away both you. Babe, I'm gonna live and die right next to you.
Hello everyone and welcome to a special edition of The History of England, an episode which is completely free, even freer than normal. I'm doing this episode together with my mate, Davey. Davey, tell everybody who you are.
Well, I'm Davey, and I'm your friend.
Yes, you are.
I also run a project called Seven Songs, which is about playing live music in living rooms and kitchens and gardens for dementia charities, primarily the Alzheimer's Research UK, which has got some relevance to...
Nice pass back.
Thank you,
Davey. This episode is going to be a brief episode to help persuade you that you might possibly, perhaps, make some donations to a charity event that Davey and I are going to be part of. This is a 100-kilometre walk. 100 kilometres, by the way, is 62 miles. And we have to walk it in under 30 hours. So that basically means setting off in the morning, walking through the night, and hopefully making it to the end. If you decide you want to donate, no pressure, but if you decide you do, the place to go to is justgiving.com/teams/shedcasters, and I'll also put a link onto the website. I was thinking about what we're doing and why we're doing it, and obviously we're doing it for medical research. So what I'm going to do today is a few minutes on tuna medicine, and in between me talking and boring you all, Davey is going to sing a few songs that are relevant. Okay, so Davey, all of medicine in Tudor times, and indeed all throughout the medieval world, was based on the theory of basically one chap called Galen, who was a Roman physician in the 2nd century AD, and also quite a bit Aristotle, actually. Aristotle was also a bugger for the bottle, but that's more your Monty P view. According to Galen, to be healthy, you had to make sure that the four humours were in balance. And if you got ill, that was because one of those humours had got out of balance, one or more. The four humours, Davey, what are the four humours?
Light bile.
Yeah, tick.
Phlegm.
Yeah, excellent.
Blood.
Yeah.
And yellow bile.
That's amazing. How did you know that?
Because I'm reading your notes.
Excellent. Those humours are connected with characteristics. So if you're big on black bile, then you're melancholic. If you're very big on phlegm, if you've got too much phlegm, you're phlegmatic. You're sort of heavy, dull, you know, you're not very energetic. If you've got too much blood is too strong in the system, then you're sanguine. And if you've got too much yellow bile, then you're choleric. So those words, choleric, sanguine, phlegmatic, melancholic, all words that we use today. So in Tudor days, they realised that things externally could affect why you were ill. So it could be that you were eating the wrong thing. So Richard Carew, for example, thought that, I quote, "the eating of fish, especially newly taken, and of the livers, gives rise to leprosy." Does fish give rise to leprosy?
No.
By and large, not. No,
and I imagine freshly taken is probably
even less likely to give leprosy.
Yeah,
I thought so, yeah. But Richard Carew was not a fan. Malaria, bad air. Led to what?
Disease. Malaria.
Correct, very good. So people didn't live in like swamps, but not realising the real reason, that in actual fact it was the mosquitoes that were living there. But at least there was an understanding that external things could affect illness and put these humours out of balance. Over this classical framework gets laid religion. So the other big reason why something might impact your health or put things out of balance was God. So you had earned God's displeasure, and that's why you were ill. That's the basic framework around which the medical practice was formed. And it's worth noting, actually, that although we kind of think of the Elizabethans and Tudors as probably pretty unhygienic, bit smelly, used to living in lots of excrement, it was all over the place, hygiene being not terribly good, a cesspit was a very expensive bit of kit, for example. But in actual fact, Tudors were very concerned about cleanliness, they didn't want to smell, they had as much pride in that as we do, it's just that it was much harder. So, for example, they believed that water could get through the skin, that your skin was porous. Therefore, you could only wash if you had a good source of clean water. Couldn't wash in less than pure water. So, some of the illnesses. Off the top of your head, Davey, can you think of illnesses from the Tudor times? Don't know how much you know about Tudor times.
Plague.
Plague, absolutely. So, plague kept on reappearing after the Black Death.
Cholera?
Cholera, I think, is later, actually, funny enough. I could be wrong, but I think that's later. Okay, so some of, I mean, there's one in plague. There were some diseases which we still have with us today. So, for example, flu, 1557, there was a flu epidemic which kills 5% of the population.
Wow.
Quite a lot, isn't it? So, flu is obviously still with us in various mutations. In around about 1500, syphilis appears. Some people think it comes from the New World. It certainly is. First gets recognised in the French invasion of Italy in 1494 and is therefore known in England as the French disease. But some of the diseases are no longer with us. They've mutated out of existence. So terrifying disease of Tudor days was something called the sweats. And the sweats, famously, you could be feeling as right as rain at breakfast, have a good hearty breakfast, a couple of sausages, blah-de-blah, blah, and be dead by lunchtime.
We've no idea what that was.
We know some of the symptoms, we do not know what it was. So completely disappeared. And that makes diagnosing, you know, why some people died, very difficult. If you were ill, Davey, if you're feeling a bit peaky, where would you go to? What would you do?
Well, I imagine first call would be my wife.
That's a very, what's the word? Perspicacious. What's perspicacious actually? Intelligent comment. Because one of the things about those days as opposed to these days, you know, we all specialise, don't we? You know, we've got doctors, we've got surgeons, we've got waste disposal people, we've got musicians, you know, people, everybody specialises. There's terrible, terrible examples, but you know what I mean? In those days, the vast majority of people are generalists. So people living on the land will living in a subsistence economy by and large. They're growing everything they need and they're selling the surplus, or they're growing everything they need to eat and they're also specialising in wool or whatever it might be. So yes, you'd go to your wife, because one of the woman's duties was to understand all the medicines and remedies that were out there. They would swap remedies with each other. They would talk to the cunning woman at the end of the village who had a real expertise in herbs. There's a famous herbal book written at the end of the 16th century, actually by a chap called John Gerard, all about the properties of plants and what they do. So the first thing would be is you'd go to your wife. Correct. What might you then do?
Would there be a doctor in the village?
It's just the right question. So there may not be one in the village, but there were three types of medical practitioners around the 16th century. The physician, and the physician's job was to think about everything that was happening inside. So if you had a stomach problem, if you had stomach ache or had a headache or something like that, that's the physician. Secondly, a barber surgeon, and their job was coming from the outside. They're skilled with sharp instruments and they might cut your leg off, for example. And the third was the apothecary. And the apothecary was your chemist, basically, who provided the materials. Given that I've mentioned the apothecary, I think this might be a good time for a song.
Let's do it. Are you going to sing along with me?
Do I have to?
Yes.
Okay, yes.
Spirit. sure it's a delusion that your boyfriend can't fret. But I swear I want nothing, just give me your hand. I've got the cure for the shape that you're in. Your saccharine luster, she's a hard little pill. She's me and hard, my hands too still. Just once in the morning, the evening again. She had the cure for the shape I was in. Since I met her down, I'd be a apothecary, the sad. Sad eyes, the burden she carried. Oh, darling, try this one. If you need a friend, I've got the cure for the shape that you're in. As I wrote off the notion that I've been well bred. First she shot me with whiskey, then she chased me with gin. Swore I was a cure for the shape she was in. Then she left me reeling with that time.
Good. So we will talk about the three kinds of medical practitioners. The physician, at the beginning of the 16th century, there aren't very many of these physicians about, actually. But by the end of the century, there's an explosion in the second half of the century. I say explosion. And by 1603, there are over 2,000 registered physicians. The physician is kind of the, what's the word I'm looking for, Davey? The summit, the...
Pinnacle,
the Rolls Royce of medical practitioners. So they spend 7 years in university. They're both studying all the plants and the illnesses and the humours and all Galen's theories. They're also studying philosophy. They're studying astrology, which may be used to diagnose illness. In 1518, there's a College of Physicians set up with a patent from Henry VIII. Funnily enough, the way a physician works, seeing the patient wasn't necessarily the most important thing. You know, you and I think of, well, we go to the doctor looks at us, asks some questions, diagnoses. In those days, it's effluvia is where the action is. Effluvia.
Is that must be where they're interested in what comes out of you.
They are, because they're basically saying, okay, so we've got these four humours. I want to know where the balance has been disrupted. So if you've got, if you'll forgive the phrase, oily poo, that's going to tell them something. So what they would do is they'll give you a Jordan. That sounds painful, doesn't it? And actually, it's just a receptacle, and you'd fill the receptacle with effluvia, effluvia. So and then,
I'd like to put We're talking about urine,
and yeah,
night soil,
and even day soil sometimes.
Anything else? Phlegm? I mean, could you get phlegm?
Could be, yeah. But they seem to focus a lot on, you know, urine and... but yes, absolutely, phlegm. They would absolutely want to see that. And they would look at it, they'd smell it, and potentially they would taste it, David, they would taste it. To find out, you know, what was wrong, what was out of balance, and then prescribe something that would put you back into balance.
So this bit is by far the most interesting thing you've said so far.
Okay, is it?
It's all come down
right
to... poo and pee, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is. Well, everything comes. Well, it isn't everything, really.
Yeah. But it's also funny as well, isn't it? Mm,
that's good. Why is that?
I don't know.
I think it's a British thing. Anyway, so that's the physician. And there are some very famous physicians, actually. Physicians, especially in the royal court, were in a very privileged position because you're close to the king, the centre of all power, and you have an opportunity, therefore, to influence. So there's a physician to Henry VIII called Dr. Butts. He's a reformer, actually, and on many occasions he helps evangelicals escape persecution by just whispering in the king's ear, I've got this friend, he's in a bit of trouble, can you put a word for him? Having access to the king was critical. So those are physicians. The next branch were the barber surgeons. So they start from a guild or a college of surgeons, probably set up around the 14th century, and they amalgamate with the College of Barbers around about 1540, so they come together. Barbers and surgeons, that seems a bit old, you know, the hairdressers, people who cut you open.
It's got to be sharp instruments.
It's got to be sharp
instruments. It's got the ability to have probably very good blades, but probably very expensive.
Absolutely.
And you could shave somebody's face and probably cut something else.
Absolutely.
With the same instrument.
And barber surgeons knew a lot, that is, remained important all the way through. They knew about gangrene, they knew that if you amputated very quickly, then the endorphins in the body would help them do that without too much pain. So they're actually very skilled.
Is that skill also based on evidence, though? Because smelling poo isn't going to get you very far.
No.
Whereas cutting somebody's leg off and over again and stitching people up is, you're going to get better at it.
You're going to get better at it. And there is, actually, it's good that you asked that question, because there is, at this time, by the end of the 16th century, by the mid-16th century, there is more evidence appearing of observing what happens and forming medical knowledge around that, rather than simply accepting what Galen had told us. So there's a chap called Andreas Vesalius who realises that Galen's got it wrong. He does dissections, he realises he's got it wrong, and he writes a book called something like On the Fabric of the Human Body. And that is then empirical evidence going to form knowledge. And the College of Barber Surgeons, set up in 1540, is given 4 cadavers a year to dissect. So, you, as you say, you've got the beginning of this impact of observation. Did we have another song? Or not?
We did.
Which was the second one? What's the second one?
It was...
Yes, something about bad families.
Bad families.
Okay, so before I go on to apothecaries, why don't we have another song?
Okay.
We're probably getting a bit bored.
Okay, so this is it's not directly linked to medicine, but we did talk about blood and bad things like cigarettes and beer that we know are harmful. But it's also just a lovely song, and it's about bad families, especially if you've got a bad brother.
Right, I don't have any of those.
And this is a Joshua James song called Family. Something awful is a screw in the world, is your right? And I watch you stumble, drunk out into the night. To catcall ladies, you're thirsty for blood, you're picking. I wanted to ask you, man, what do you do in the day? So bum me a cigarette, buy me a beer, till I'm happy to be here, happy to be here with all of my family, hookers and keys, and the man who wants to let me. Tell me you've had
one hell of a time. Through the haze and the gun smoke, I'm forced to believe you're probably right. And someone lies bleeding, someone got violent and did nothing twice. I watched you, my brother, making a fool of the moment. So buy me a cigarette, buy me a beer, till I'm happy to be, happy to be with all of my family. Happy to be here with all of my family, hookers and heels, and the men who watched me like hungry black
It's got bleeding. Which one of the humours?
Yeah, it's got
brothers, cigarettes, which will probably be modern humours. It's
so right. It's so apt.
Yeah,
it's just beautifully chosen.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for choosing it. So one more medical practitioner to do, and then just a couple of sweep up points, and then we're done, and we can have the final song. So the apothecary is the last part of this equation, and the apothecary actually came from the grocers. So apothecaries used to be part of the Guild of Grocers from the 1200s, because their skill was to procure materials, spices, wine, as well as the components of medicine. So they're good at sourcing and selling ingredients, essentially. But they begin to specialise, and it's not until 1617, actually, that the Society of Apothecaries was set up. Once again, apothecaries were part of the royal household, so there's a chap called John Grice, who's the royal apothecary to Henry VII. He is also the king's confectioner. So, as you can see, it's a combination. And as you might observe, you know, everything, as we were discussing earlier, everything is better with a pastry anyway, so, you know. The apothecaries would tie up with the physician. So the physician would say, you know, this is what I prescribe. I suggest you go down to David the apothecary and he will mix this up for you. And you might go and say, look, I've got this, but also, you know, my ear's hurting a little bit. And there's the apothecary would say, well, I've got something for that, sir. It's pretty much like going to Boots today. So some remedies. What sort of things were these apothecaries and physicians prescribing? Rheumatism.
Yeah. So I'm reading your notes here.
Yeah.
Wear a donkey skin. That's ludicrous.
That is. There's probably a theory behind it, though. I do not know what the theory is, though. But next time I meet a donkey, I will, of course, ask them. There's quite a lot of direct action going on here. You know, if you're deaf, put something in your ear. So if you're deaf, mix the gall of a hare with the grease of a fox. Warm the mixture and place it in the ear.
Which makes no sense, because you won't be able to hear.
Yeah, well, if you weren't deaf before, you certainly would be afterwards, yeah. I think is maybe that was the principle. Baldness. David, this is one for you.
Well, it says shave head, which I've done.
Okay, yeah.
Smear it with grease of a fox or a bear.
Yeah.
So if you've got a fox or a bear, it doesn't really matter. Fox or bear, fine.
Fox, bear fox, yeah. Yeah. Okay, so that's a good one.
Smear the head with Beetlejuice.
Hmm.
Yeah. What is Beetlejuice?
Where do you get Beetlejuice from, actually? You have to go to the stars.
The stars?
Beetlejuice? It's an old joke. Beetlejuice? No?
No.
Okay. Gout? This is one of the examples where there are a few remedies for gout, and one of those remedies is still in operation, so guess which one, okay? You can either take a substance called colchicum, or you can boil a red-haired dog in oil, add worms, pig's marrow and herbs, make a mixture, rub it into the affected area. So, which of those two remedies do you think is still in operation today?
Well, it's got to be the first one, isn't it?
Is it?
Well, a red-haired dog is like a red setter.
Boil
a red setter.
Yeah. Well, hang on, we'll get prosecuted.
Yeah, but how much oil will you need to do to boil a red setter? I mean, what other red-haired dog? Is there any little red-haired dogs?
That's true. Actually, that's a good point. Actually, you've gone into this in a lot more depth than I have. So, ringworm. What would you do if you had ringworm? Obviously, you'd wash your hair in something. But what would you wash your hair in?
Well, it's going to be something disgusting, isn't
it? It's going to be something disgusting. I'll leave that to your imagination. So, as you can see, the remedies are not necessarily what we would think about, but all of those things are thinking about the humours, what's out of balance, and what might put them back into balance. Fine little stories. The Tudors, the Tudor monarchs, were particularly panicky about poisons, obsessive, paranoid, that's the word. So Henry VIII, for example, one of his bishops, Bishop Fisher, is purportedly the recipient of attempted poisoning. So he institutes a new law, which is that poisoners, if found guilty, are boiled to death, boiled alive. And three people are actually boiled until it's repealed by his son after his death. And Elizabeth was very scared about poisons too, so she was given various tools to try and prevent it. So she had a walking stick actually made from unicorn's horn. Actually, I'm not quite sure.
You're not sure that's true, are you?
Yeah, no. Well, is it the actual unicorn? Not quite sure about that. Yeah. But she definitely had the stick. I'm not actually sure it was to do with poison. She had a horn cup that was supposed to break into pieces if it came into contact with poison. But her main way was to use a Beza stone, which she had on a gold chain, which was hanging from a little bracelet. So, a Beza stone. So what she would do, she'd take this Beza stone and she would dip it into the wine. Okay, and that would tell her if it was poisoned or not and neutralise the poison. So, bearing in mind you're going to drink this wine, what do you think a Beza stone is?
I'm guessing it's not a stone.
Yes, good guess.
I don't know what a Beza is.
No, okay. So we're talking goats, goat-like creatures, goats, llamas, that sort of thing.
So it's a stone that's inside
a
goat.
Yes, inside is the key. So it's a mass of stuff that forms inside the guts of llamas and goats.
Like a fatberg.
I suppose so, yeah. So personally, I'm not sure whether I'd take I might just take the poison, to be honest, rather than the wine dipped in Beza stone. But anyway, that is what she used. So there's our quick flyby Tudor medicine. I was also thinking that what we're going to do is walk a long distance. So I thought for the last song, you had a song that connected to the fact that we're going to walk a long way.
Well, we're going to walk nearly 500 miles.
Feels going to feel like that, yeah.
Or 63 miles. Yeah. But anyway, so 500 miles is not the claim of song, but it's a rather beautiful song by Peter Paul and Mary, which they did in the late 50s. And so this is a version of it about... I guess the nice message is it's sometimes difficult to go home because of some of the things you've done or have happened to you, no matter how close or far away it is.
The nice message?
Well, so I sing the song.
It's quite nice, yes.
If you miss the train I'm on, you will know that I am gone. You can hear the whistle blow 100 miles, 100 miles, 100 miles, 100 miles, 100 miles. You can hear the whistle blow. Thank you. my back, not a penny to my name. Lord, I can go back home. This old way, this old way, this old way, this old way, this old way. Lord, I can go back home. This old way.
Last bit out of
that. Well, it's fine, it sounded quite good actually.
It was just that last bit I got completely wrong.
Sounded good. Well. So, look, I think we've delighted our listeners long enough. So, let's stop, shall we? Shall we stop?
I'm delighted to stop.
Okay, so everybody, just to make sure you haven't missed it, Davey and I are going to be walking for charity 62 miles in one go under 32 hours. We are doing it for Alzheimer's research. And we are calling ourselves the Shedcasters, and it's a collaboration between Seven Songs and the Shedcasters.
Yeah.
And if you want to donate, we'd be very pleased, as will Alzheimer's. And the place to go is my website, thehistoryofengland.co.uk, and you can find a link there. Or you go to justgiving.com/teams/Shedcasters, and you can donate whatever you like.
To whoever you would like.
To whomever you like. So there are three of us in the team. Yeah. So, you know, just take your pick. And we won't see it as a contest or be hurt or anything like that. Slightly, but... No. Okay, thank you very much for listening. Sorry for wobbling on. Goodbye from me and...
Oh, goodbye. That was really interesting, David.
Thank you
for inviting us.
Doctor, doctor, please bring me my wine.
Bye.
All the nights to remember are getting harder to find. And the moths of confusion to each corner of my mind. Baby, call me up when you get some time, so I'll stay with you until the morning, when the golden sun shades the moon, and when the black disease eats away both you and me. Babe, I'm gonna live and die right next to you.